What's up, friends? Welcome to the Applied Training Podcast. I'm your host, Nathan Keeney. In this episode of ATP, I sit down with my best friend, Jacob Fox. Jacob has been a competitive cheer coach for more than 7 years, taking multiple teams to Worlds, which is the highest level of competitive cheerleading. For the last 5.5 years, he spent his time growing and learning as a coach, trainer, and now leader at a boutique fitness studio in Phoenix, Arizona, Functional Fitness. In this episode, we talk about meditation, Jacob's current preferred practice of Tai Chi, and the effects it has on his mental, spiritual, and physical health. We also talk about Jacob's diet, his daily decisions to choose whole organic foods over quick shakes, bars, and fast food for the most part, and how it's affected and now currently affects his progress in the gym with lifting weights. Seeing his progress over these past few years has been incredible, to see him go from lifting heavy weights, pushing 500-pound deadlifts with a belt, to now pulling 475 pounds without a belt and squatting 365 pounds for reps without a belt as well. This dude's progress has been phenomenal, and I'm so happy to be able to have seen and witness a lot of this. With this concept of diet, we also talk about the concept of optimal homeostasis and what it looks like and feels like to function optimally. And I really do believe that this is something that Jacob has been experiencing through his current life decisions that he makes on a daily basis. We finished up this episode today about a trainer's influence on the atmosphere and environment of the gym that they train out of, and the effect that coaches' daily actions have on not only their own clients, but also the members coming in on a daily basis. And this is something, again, that resonates really well with me because I coached alongside with Jacob for a few years, and I've trained with him for so many years that I can see his maturity in coaching, how he holds himself and how he presents himself, develop over the years. And this is something that, again, I really have admired, seeing the progress in his life. And I'm really cool. I'm really happy to hear that he was able to experience and share so much of it with us today. And so with all the different topics we touch on regarding holistic health and living intentionally, I invite you all to really let what Jacob says and shares resonate with you. This is someone I've trained alongside with for years, coached alongside with, and competed with. Jacob is someone I hold in high regard to and have the utmost respect for. And after listening to this episode, I'm sure you all have a similar opinion toward him as well. And so it's with that I invite you all to enjoy this conversation I have with my best friend, Jacob Fox. I'm happy I get to have you on this podcast. I know that this won't be the only time, so.
Yeah, for sure. I'm excited about it, man. I've listened to your past too, and they've been really good, really easy to listen to, and you did a good job directing the conversation and kind of staying on topic, leading it back to where the points you were trying to make and things like that.
Yeah, it's easy to kind of deviate from the topic at hand, but it's fine. It is what it is. I want to talk to you about the first thing that has been influencing me a lot that I've been watching through your videos and on your stories, of how you've been doing Tai Chi daily for, what, you got 76 days now?
Yeah, so, yeah. Today would be 76, yeah.
Did you do it today? Already?
Not yet. No. Yeah, I got it in yesterday, but I haven't yet today. So I'll probably do it this afternoon.
What motivated you to do that?
What motivated me to do that? I've done it on and off in the past, and always notice a really positive effect from it.
Yeah.
But haven't done it consistently enough to like really move the needle. So, that's like, you know, I don't really know that much about Tai Chi itself. Like, I haven't really studied Tai Chi or taking classes on Tai Chi, but through the Czech system in the Czech Institute, they teach zone exercises, right? Mm-hmm. And they kind of call it zone exercises so that people can grasp it a little bit better. Some people hear Tai Chi and just think it's a little, might be a little woo-woo, or just might turn them off a little bit, yeah. Right? So they call them zone exercises. And it's basically just breathing slowly and matching your breathing to your movement, right?
Yeah.
You couple inhalation with abduction, supination, extension, and you couple exhalation with adduction, pronation, right, flexion. And you can do this for almost any movement, right? And they have specific ones that apply to the different chakras of the body, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's Tai Chi, but they call it zone exercise. And so I don't know that many different movements or that much about it. I just know that when I do the few movements that I do, targeted towards the chakra that I'm targeting, and I'm doing it consistently, I feel a lot better. I'm recovering a lot better in my energy, and my patience is better. I'm more centered. I'm more relaxed. I'm more calm, but not relaxed or calm in a tired way. I feel like I have this kind of just deep-seated energy where it's there if I need it, you know? And I guess what inspired me to do the 100 days straight was just, number one, to dive into the consistency of doing it, the discipline of doing it, forcing myself to do it every day. And that's kind of their initial challenge, is like, can you do the traditional 100-day gong, is what it's called, where you do 100 days in a row without missing. And if you miss, you're supposed to start over. Right, that's kind of the whole idea, is that you kind of build that discipline. That did happen to me once when I got to like 40 or 45 days and I missed one day and I had to start over. So
I remember that. I remember you posted about it and you just owned it though. That's what was dope, is you're just like, well, I missed it. I have to start over. I got to go back to ground zero. And that's got to be like,
yeah, that was kinda,
extremely frustrating.
That was kind of tough to do. But if I didn't do that, then I would have known in the 100%. Back of my head that I didn't really do it, and
it's that
I'm just hoping that I don't miss any more days, because it's about to get real hot out here, so.
Yeah. Do you have any expectations or anything going into it that you're looking to get out of? Do you, when you go to do Tai Chi, are you expecting like, man, I've had a long day today, or like, I'm fighting with someone that's close to me, or something's on my mind, or do you just try and go there, breathe, and think about nothing?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say it depends on the day. Some days I do use it acutely, like I know I'm stressed or frustrated with something or someone specifically, and I'll go into it hoping to release that, you know? And I always feel more clear and more level-headed afterwards. But some days it's just to go, just to do it and just kind of drop in, and it just feels good. It's like, beyond just doing the Tai Chi or the breathing and moving itself, like it's just having that time to myself, you know, and that's something that I think has also made a big difference for me, is because I'm quite an introverted person, and I really recharge my own batteries when I spend some time alone. So that's just been huge for me. Just being able to take that time and like blocking it out in my day, planning it and saying, okay, I'm going to spend this 30 minutes by myself, just breathing, moving, you know, listening to a little bit of music or a podcast or something, just sitting in the grass even. So yeah, it's cool, man. I feel better afterwards. My energy is better. I think beyond just the moving and breathing, doing it in the sun with your feet on the ground, right, with like either in some damp grass
in the soil,
like,
yeah,
you know, like actual earth where you're exchanging those ions with the earth and the sun's charging you, and you're just like, right, you're just pulling energy from that experience, and you know, it feels good. It really is. It is grounding and relaxing. So I'm grateful for that, and hopefully after 100 days I can continue to do it consistently.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that, with intentionally being somewhere that you can ground yourself, right? I remember my freshman year of high school when I took weights, intro to weights. This was when I was like still just a shithead kid and like didn't take weightlifting too seriously. And I remember my coach Hornbeck was his name, I'll never forget. He's like, you know, sometimes on the weekends you just have to take your shoes and socks off and go rub your feet in the dirt and like connect with the earth. And I'm like, what is this guy talking about? It's like,
talking about, bro, you hippie?
Yeah, it's like being 13, right? And you're just like, I just want to lift weights and like be cool and like do all these things, but it's funny that even back then, like, he already knew, like, no, this is an essential part of your recovery. It's like you're saying, there's this time to recharge your batteries, and whether you're introverted or extroverted, I think that it's a necessary thing to do that. And you also touched upon this in one of your Wednesday walks, or walk and talk Wednesdays. Walk it like I talk it Wednesdays. And you were talking about some of the benefits that you were seeing from Tai Chi, and one of them being, like, because we work in a field where we're extremely extroverted, or we're trying to make someone else's day by intentionally keeping a conversation going, intentionally being engaging, and being 100% present there. It's it demands a lot. And so even if we only have like 5 or 6 sessions, to the normal person that might be like, man, you're not even working a full day. But for us, it's like, man, I'm giving 100% of my undivided attention through coaching, through communicating with this person, through setting up weights for them for 6 hours, 6 different people. And you're right to that point. Like, it gets taxing, and we need to have that time to decompress, to be with ourselves, and like make sure that we have enough energy to serve other people. Right. And I think that's that's a cool thing with the job that we have, is that we get to serve in a personalized way and in an intimate way with someone that we've been coaching for an extended period of time. And I think for you, you have that great benefit that I almost envy, is because you've been at Functional Fitness for what, 7 years or a little bit longer?
Like 5.5.
5.5 still. Yeah. And like, and you have like Neil and like some of your clients that you've had for almost the whole time you've been there. And so that relationship is so much more fostered. It's been nourished for so long. Like, I don't know. What is that like whenever you see people like Neil or Victoria that you have so much success with, not only in like getting them to lose weight or whatever it is, but I don't know, what else do you coach with them for that long?
Yeah, I think it's cool. So as we get to know each other better, and as the trust starts to get built over time, right? I can begin to talk to them about some of these things that we're talking about, like the breathing, getting your feet on the earth, getting out in the sun, right? Because most people don't really know that knowledge, right? And they don't really see how it could be beneficial to them. And so it's hard to open up that conversation with someone, with a client that's fairly new to you, right? Like, they don't, like, that's kind of, that requires a little bit more trust for them to be like, oh, you want me to like go like just be barefoot in the grass for 30 minutes? Or like, what is that? You know what I mean? So yeah, they might fire you. So yeah, as the trust gets built, as you know, through training and programming and then making corrections to their diet and things like that, they start to see results. And then as they start to see more results and start to feel better, then they start to trust what you're saying more, right?
Yeah.
So as you build that relationship, then we can start to go further and further down the rabbit hole and see, like, okay, I start looking at every aspect of their life. It's like, okay, well, what is your digestion like? Right? Like, are you, you know, what do your poops look like? Are you burping excessively after you eat? Are you digesting your food? Right? Yeah. Are you chewing your food, eating slowly? What do your sleep habits look like? Do you getting outside in the sun? Are you going for walks? Like, all these things that may seem like really small adjustments to the average person, we know as coaches and through experience that all these small things, your daily habits, right, they add up, and they contribute to, number one, your recovery, but number two, your ability to even adapt from exercise. If your body doesn't have any excess energy, your body is just focused on recovering from exercise. It's not going to have the ability to adapt.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that normal in our society is so far away from, the human body's actual normal or homeostasis, that we may be, you know, sometimes thinking that we're living in a normal way, or even, you know, even a slightly health conscious way, but it's still far from the potential, right?
Yeah.
There's levels to this shit.
Seriously.
Right. And yeah, exactly. And it's, you know, 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago, 5,000 years ago, we were just, our bodies weren't taxed with so much from the environment, from light pollution, right? There's so many things that that we're just accustomed to because that's how we've always lived our lives that we don't realize are negatively affecting us. So we have to really work hard to create an energy excess in our body and really bring our body back to homeostasis. But when you do, you start seeing much better adaptation to exercise. You start feeling better, having more energy, right? And these are things that I've learned through experience and through
trial and error.
Messing myself up a little bit, you know, trial and error.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that of it becomes the norm of just being able to recover. But yeah, having that excess is what allows you to optimize your training. It's exactly. Like you can be good at your training and then you can be optimal with your training. And so mm-hmm. there's that balance of, like you're saying, controlling the variables that you have control over. And I think I talked about this a little bit with Jake, but utilizing that free time and like having respect for your sleep and making sure that you're not just dozing off in front of the TV and like, okay, let me just like crawl to my bed now and then just keep doing the same thing. It's like,
yeah,
I notice if I'm even doing that, if I'm falling asleep or if I'm not even paying attention to the TV, like I'll turn it off or like go sit in my room and I'll sit next to my bed. That way, once I'm calm, I'm a little bit more relaxed. I have better control of my heart rate and my breath. Okay, now I can enter the bed. Because if I enter my bed and I'm restless still, or if I'm still thinking about something, if I'm whatever it is, it can have a huge effect on my sleep that night. And I've noticed it, like obviously with my Whoop too, now that I have been tracking that for the last 5.5 months of, man, the nights that I just kind of jump into bed and wake up like 28% recovered or whatever, and my resting heart rate is a lot higher, I'm forcing myself to go back and be like, okay, well, what was I doing differently? Was I doing something differently? Was this just a fluke? Do I actually feel more recovered? But most of the time it's like, no. Like I got home from hanging out with friends and then I went to bed right away. Or like I didn't journal or I didn't read or something. And they're, like you said, they're small things, but they make a huge part of our daily habits. Like Jordan Peterson talks about in the 12 Rules of Life of like those small decisions that you make every day are going to make the larger impact in the long run. If you're arguing with like when he gave that example of dad arguing with his son for like 45 minutes a night, 7 days a week to go to bed. It's like, dude, you're spending like 5.5 hours a week just yelling at your kid. Like think about what that relationship, like what that's going to do to influence the relationship with your son, what that's going to do to influence your relationship with yourself and how you view yourself as a parent and so forth. Right. So this is clearly going beyond just exercise and recovering, but it's also there's different aspects that this is going to influence. And if we can control it in this environment of our health, then it's going to be able to pour over and leak into other areas of our life a lot easier.
Absolutely. I love, I think one of the specific examples he kind of talks about is like, you know, you think Jordan Peterson, who I'm referring to, he says, you know, most people, they spend so much time preparing and getting excited for the one or two vacations they take every year. Like that's their whole life. Meanwhile, you're not thinking about how you walk in the door from work every single day, how you get up in the morning and treat your family every single day. Right? Those things make up so much more of your life than the one or two vacations you take a year.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's so true. And when it applies to health, it's like, you know, you've seen people diet hardcore and get lean and look good for a specific occasion for that vacation or for summer,
physique show.
And then they just kind of fall off the wagon. It's like the wisdom of consistency over time is going to take you so much further than trying to focus on your health or train or do anything like that for a specific occasion. Or to look, you know, a specific way, you know, and not that it doesn't feel good to look good from training hard and eating well, but it's about honoring your body and every day kind of figuring out, okay, what decisions am I making today that are going to benefit me? Like, how can I make a decision that's going to be a net positive versus a net negative, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you do that every day and you're training consistently and you're eating well and you're taking care of your body, then the aesthetics will come, the performance will come, right? Your health will come, but it's just that daily commitment.
Yeah, and that's not a flashy answer either. And that's what
It's
can,
not sexy.
you know, it's not a sexy answer. And that's the thing is like a lot of times people are like I had one of my clients ask me last week, "Hey, it's like I want to gain like 15 pounds of muscle. Is that attainable?" And I was like, "Dude, you have like 10 years?" Like, yeah.
Yeah,
And
right.
his
You
eyes were
got
just
3 to 6 years of hard training.
yeah, he's just like, "What do you mean?" And I was like, "Dude, think about it. Like, if your body needs to build, if your body is able to build a full pound of muscle and you can retain that for say 6 months, that was a damn good 6 months. Like you did a
Yeah.
lot of things right, and you did a lot of things
Absolutely.
right often. And that's what's so hard to get people to understand is like our body is very smart. It's really good at responding to what we're doing, but it's responding to what we're doing chronically. It's not responding to on Wednesday I slept 8 hours, hydrated and had an awesome workout, and then Thursday I drank and had 6 hours of sleep and I couldn't
Yeah.
deadlift and I felt weak. And it's like, well,
Yeah.
let's go back and let's reassess, right?
Exactly.
But yeah, it's
That's
true.
a
There's a lot of things that go into it. And like you're saying, it's decisions that we make daily that will affect us that day and the next day, right? If I'm making a conscious effort to hydrate myself today to make good food decisions or dietary decisions today, it's going to affect my performance today, and it's also going to affect my sleep tonight, which will affect my performance the next day. And that's the thing that
Absolutely.
a lot of people don't really recognize or maybe connect. And that's where it's kind of dropping these subtle hints each time we see our clients and like, okay, like for me, it's like, how much did you sleep last night? How do you feel today? Like, how much water have you had yet? If I'm seeing them at 7 a.m. or like 4 p.m., I'm asking the same questions. And I know I'm going to be
Yeah.
getting different answers because some of my clients do intermittent fasting or whatever it is, but it's like, okay, if you're intermittent fasting and I see you at 9 a.m. and you still haven't eaten and you want to gain strength, understand your body is in a fasted state. So if you want to be able to like
Yeah.
optimally perform, you're going to need some kind of sustenance in your body, even if it's a banana or something simple. And so like with clients that are trying to like, oh, you know, I want to improve body comp, I want to stay lean and I want to gain muscle. Yeah, dude, so does everyone
Yeah.
else. So what does everyone
Just
else?
pick one. We'll focus on that for a few months and then we'll go to the other one. Yeah, that's
Exactly,
exactly
exactly. And
true.
it's like if I ask them like just have a banana before the workout. What but I'm not fasting anymore. It's okay, dude. It's okay. Like you'll
Yeah.
have a better workout and
Yeah.
it'll benefit your body more in the long run rather than you just starving yourself for another hour trying to survive a workout. I'd rather you be thriving in this
Absolutely.
workout.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, there's so much there. Number one, you kind of touched on the decisions creating momentum, right? And that's the
Yeah.
beautiful thing about it is when you make a few good decisions, you start to feel better, right? You start to have more momentum in the right direction, and it's easier to keep going. So
Yeah.
that's a beautiful thing is that you start to hydrate more, you start to sleep a little bit better, you start to perform a little bit better. Now you kind of want to train versus kind of, not looking forward to it or trying to find a way out of it. You're like, oh, I feel good. I kind of want to go train today. I'm looking forward to that. Let's see
Yeah.
how much I can, let's see what I can squat. Let's see, how fast I can get my 10 calories on the ski or whatever it is,
Yeah.
right? When you have that desire to train, now you're training harder. Training harder, you're sleeping better, right? And that momentum builds. And as you start to clean your body up and get healthier, then you start to become aware of how you're feeling more, right? You start to kind of strengthen the signals that you receive from your body on how you're feeling. And as far as the intermittent fasting or kind of jumping around from goal to goal, right? That, like we said, like that kind of chronic
Body comp.
inconsistency of, I want this, but I also want this, but I also want this. It's like, okay, wait, if you want to put on 10 pounds of muscle, it might take a few years, but let's see how we can focus on strength for 3 to 4 months. And when we see some progress there, then we can focus on recomping for 2 or 3 months, right? And we see some progress there, we'll go back to strength. So everything is give and take. You can't do everything at once, right? So I think that's another touch on the wisdom of experience and being a trainer is like you got to coach people to their goals, but you also have to guide them on what their goals are and saying, okay, this if you're trying to you want your goal is to gain 5 pounds of muscle and lose 3% body fat in the next 6 months, that's probably not going to happen. So let's readjust your goals a little bit so that we can so we can see progress and make you feel successful in this one area, and then from there we'll jump somewhere else, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that we both experienced. And you know, when you've been training for 7, 8, 9 years consistently, you understand those fluctuations, because number one, you start to get bored of the style of training you're doing anyways.
Yeah,
right?
100%.
So you start to want to focus on something else, and it just kind of happens naturally. But when you're training someone and you're trying to guide them through that process, it's important, I think, to educate them on, you know, how it's done and why you need to focus on one goal, one achievement at a time.
Yeah, and that's where I think being a successful trainer looks like having a good understanding of a lot of different topics. And then maybe having your niche or having your one specialty that you're really good at, right? Like if I'm really good at helping people lose weight, I still need to know how to help them build strength. I still need to know how to tell them what good recovery looks like and demonstrate that to them and explain it to them in a digestible way. Because otherwise, if they lose weight, but they feel like shit still, or they feel worse and their quality of life has lessened, it's like, okay, you've gotten to your goal, but at what compromise? At what point are
exactly.
You're okay, you're at 8% body fat, you're at 10% body fat, but you're eating 1,100 calories a day and you're not sleeping as much and like you can't go out with your friends anymore. So we have to think of what's relative and what's realistic for them, and then be able to, I think Dan John talks about this, of like giving your clients what they want, but also what they need. And so you need to have a balance of that, right? Like, okay, I'm going to help you lose weight, but understand like this is going to take time. I still want you to work on building strength and building muscle and convincing, especially women, that it's not going to make them bulky or they're not going to look like Arnold after deadlifting for a few months, right? And
allowing it works that way.
Yeah, right. And I'll always tell them like, okay, I've been deadlifting for 3 years and I don't look like Arnold. So either I have terrible genetics or this idea might be skewed. And there's a lot of people that get stuck in these traditional mentalities of that example, or of like not squatting with their knees, passing their toes and stuff like that. And so how do you go about explaining that to clients and not making them feel like shit or like getting them down, but it's like, hey, listen, this is the reality.
Yeah, that's a good question of like, how do you educate your client truthfully without making them feel like it's impossible? Because I mean, it's definitely not impossible. Anyone can do it, but I think people underestimate the level of commitment that it takes to really see dramatic changes in your body, right? And number mm-hmm. one, visibly, but number two, how you feel, your strength and your body composition, all those things. I mean, it's just I guess my approach with clients is just, I have, you know, mostly I'm dropping small nuggets throughout the session, right? And I'm trying to guide them on their goals, like I said. So I'll talk with them, get an idea of kind of what their goals are, what they want, where they want to go. And I'll say, okay, this is kind of a realistic goal if you can train 3 days a week and if you can be really consistent with the food recommendations that I gave you, right? And just try to guide them in that way. And be honest and say, if you're only going to work out twice a week and you're not really focusing on your sleep, or you're still not making, you know, the lifestyle changes that I recommended as far as drinking enough water or eating this food, or exchanging, you know, this meal that you're eating currently for, you know, maybe a salad or, a nice piece of protein with some vegetables, then you can train hard the 2 or 3 times that you come a week, but you're not going to see the results that you want as quickly as you want. And I'll just try to break it down from that way. And it's like, the more that you put into this, the more you're going to get out of it, just like anything else in life.
100%.
Right? If you're really committed, you're really focused, and this is where your attention is, where your attention and where your intention is, then you're going to see the changes that you're hoping for. But it really takes, you can't dabble in it. You know what I mean? You can't be like, oh, I work out twice a week and I try to drink water, but sometimes I forget. And you're not going to be looking shredded with your shirt off.
Nope.
You know what I mean? You're not going to be turning heads if you're not. That's the truth. It's like, it just like anything. I think people a lot of times people just they see someone that's gotten far, right, or that looks a certain way or super strong, and they just assume like, oh, that person probably has good genetics. That person probably started from a place way ahead of me. You know, they kind of discount the actual level of attention, intention, discipline that it takes to get to a certain place, to make progress in this way.
There's always that assumption that, oh, they got there quicker than me, or they were just pushing the right buttons and I wasn't. And it's like, no, they probably were pushing the right buttons, but they were pushing those right buttons for months, for years. And maybe they've been doing this as a kid and they just started to perfect it more as they got older. Whereas if our clients are like, well, I never played sports. I haven't really touched a weight since and now I'm 35 and I'm trying to like lift weights. Like, why haven't I been gaining strength as quickly as this person? Or why haven't I been losing weight as quickly as this person? Mm-hmm. And that's the other tough part, right? Is I heard this quote the other day, and I forget where it was, but it's comparison is the ultimate thief of enjoyment. Right. And so it's, if I'm always comparing myself to like, well, but you lift 300 pounds. Well, yeah. But you just deadlifted 200. You've never deadlifted that before. So
yeah,
why?
Exactly.
I'm not trying to give you pity of like, oh, you didn't lift 300, but 200's okay. It's like, no, 200's phenomenal. Like, that's exceeding your expectations. You're deadlifting 100 or 1.5 times your body weight, whatever it is. I have a client that seems to struggle with this a lot of like, you know, I'm not as good as certain men are just because I work in a male dominant work situation. But if I know more about sports than they do, then I'm a damn good person, or like, I have that on them. And it's like, yeah, but there's so much more to you. It's like, I've been working with you for 6 months. It's like, I know what kind of person you are. It's like, you're good to be around because of the person you are, not because you know more about sports or not because you can lift more than these guys. And that's what can be tough and discouraging for me to see in clients, is like, are you doing this for selfish motivations, or are you doing this to know that like, oh, this is actually going to help keep my body good for longer. This is going to keep my body healthy for longer. And so it can be like an ongoing battle, not necessarily battle, but an ongoing process of trying to, again, educate your clients that way. In like you're saying, like an appropriate and a polite manner, by dropping nuggets, by doing, maybe not telling them everything right up front, but just slowly telling them like, hey, you know, this is 20 pounds up from last week and you've never done this before. That's really cool. Oh, really? Like, yeah, I have it right here. It's on the Excel sheet. And that's what's cool, is like marking down progress, especially with strength specifically, is that it's so easily measurable. That for me, because I work with a lot of tech people that love numbers, they love statistics, they love facts, they love things that are for certain. It's like, dude, you certainly are getting stronger. I know that for a fact. Like, I've watched you progress. And so usually for me, when I highlight that to my clients, like, that will at least put a smile on their face. That will at least give them justification of like, okay, like, I'm not wasting my money, I'm not wasting my time. And it's like, yeah, so now see if we can get you to sleep 5 hours instead of 4, then let's see what happens, right? Like, man, I have a handful of clients that are like, how much did you sleep? I feel pretty good. I got like 5 hours of sleep. Then my son woke me up at 2, and then I fell back asleep, and then the alarm went off at 6, and then I rolled out of bed at 7. It's like, okay.
wow.
Yeah, it's crazy for me to think. I have one person I see her at 8, and I was like, what time are you up this morning? She's like, 5. And I was like, dang, so what have you been up to? She's like, well, I didn't get out of bed until 7. I was like, well, what were you doing? She's like, I was just checking the news on my phone. It's like, oh, you're checking the news for 2 hours on your phone before you get out of bed. Like, it's
the start to the day.
It's an interesting, it's an interesting way to see, like, oh, okay. And it's a lot of times it takes a lot of conscious effort for me to not be like, what the fuck are you doing? What are you doing?
Yeah.
I've just been like, oh, okay, like, yeah, like, get more sleep or just get out of bed. And so, it's, for me, it's tough. I don't know. Do you run into that situation at all with any of your clients of like, man, these are huge behaviors that are influencing your progress?
For sure. I mean, it can get frustrating with, especially with some of my longer term clients who I've had, like someone like my client Neil, I've been training for 4+ years, you know, and he's made awesome progress. Like, he just PR'd last week, did like 325 deadlift for 4 reps, and he only weighs like 160 pounds.
Jeez.
165 pounds. Yeah. So he's made sick progress. He's gotten strong.
Jeez.
Right. But he got lean at one point, right? And then he kind of started slacking off. And like, I'll be in his ear every day, like, what did you have for dinner? What are you eating for breakfast? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he knows. That's the thing, is he knows, right, what he should be doing. Okay. He'll come in and tell me, like, oh, I had a piece of blueberry pie last night. Like, that's the third one this week, bro. What are you doing? You know what I mean? And like, so it can get frustrating, but at the same time, it's like, if he knows what to be doing to get to a certain point, I can be in his ear about it, but I can't attach myself to – I can't attach my value as a coach to him complying with what I think he should do, you know? It's like
– yeah, for sure.
You know that I – you know that you probably shouldn't be eating that blueberry pie, especially if you want to get lean, especially if you want to feel better about the way you look. But if you're going to do it, you know the consequences. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not going to hound you.
Yeah, I'm not going to hound you on it.
Yeah, exactly. So that's one point. And to the other point, I think, too, just the awareness is not there for some people.
Mm.
Like, you may talk to your client and they, you know, like, oh, I feel pretty good. I got 5.5 hours of sleep. Like, okay, that's cool. Like, what were you doing before bed? Like, oh, I watched a movie and then fell asleep on the couch and then I went upstairs after like an hour. And it's like, oh, okay. So sometimes, like, we you know, from our perspective, it's so crazy, right? It's like, how could you do that? How do you even function the next day? But if someone, that's just what someone's used to, right? Like, we adapt so quickly to how we feel. Like, that's their normal. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? And the awareness might not even be there that, like, oh, I should have a nighttime routine and I should turn the TV off an hour before I get in bed and I should aim for 8 hours of sleep, right? And it's like, the awareness might not even be there. And coming down on someone like that, that's just going to turn them off. It's just going to anchor them into their current position more, I think.
Yeah. It's
like, you got to kind of slowly uncover the truth and bring that awareness to them. It's like, okay, so you fell asleep on the couch last night, and today your workout looked like X.
Mm.
Versus, hey, you went to bed, you know, an hour earlier and you got 7 hours of sleep, and today your workout looked like Y, right? And it's mm. like, how do you kind of slowly draw those comparisons and those conclusions for them so that they start to uncover that truth on their own? Because once they start to correlate what they're doing to how they're feeling and how they're performing, then slowly that's when they start to like, oh, I kind of want to get to bed a little bit earlier because I know I'm gonna have a better workout tomorrow.
Yeah.
Right. So I think, yeah, you have to be patient. And obviously that can be hard when you know, you're almost burdened with the knowledge of like, just do all these things and you'll be good. But it's like,
let me give you five things to fix.
Yeah.
But yeah, that can be a lot. That can be a lot to change. I want to kind of pivot here a little bit and ask you more so how you were able to develop such a great relationship with your body and how you respond. And again, this is from an external view. Obviously knowing you half my life and seeing your behaviors and habits change throughout the years, like when we lived together, obviously in college, when I worked at GNC, you're getting mass gainers with 700 calories, 5 grams of creatine, adding 5 more grams of creatine, dumping that in like a bowl of oatmeal, just consuming. Like 50 grams of carbs. I'm going to get to 200 pounds. Like, so you go from that to now, like, you're a little bit more relatively gluten-free. You don't really eat eggs very often as much anymore or dairy, and you're eating more whole foods. You've hit all-time PRs without even a belt now. You don't use sleeves or anything. Like, the transformation that I've seen as a close friend of yours, is my best friend, like, this has been astronomically, like, how did he do this? It's
it was kind of forced upon me. It's interesting how you look back and like during the time that I was going through some of those things, like it felt so difficult, and like I felt like I didn't know what I was doing, right? But coming, you know, being on the other side of some of those things, it just you see how it was kind of pushed, it was kind of happened for you, right? So I guess I could go into the story a little bit, but you know, around 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, I just like, it was about 3 years ago, I just started getting sick, like not feeling good all the time, And anytime I would eat, I would get bloated, like really tired. Energy was very poor. I had brain fog a lot of the time. I was inflamed, like I could see it in my face. Like I would have just redness in my face all the time. I was getting eczema breakouts on my arms.
Jeez.
And I was just really struggling, even like mentally, like, am I going crazy? Like, I feel like garbage every day. And it's just like,
yeah,
it's just staying around. Like, and it's like, I was just not willing to accept that as my normal because I didn't feel like that before.
Yeah.
Right? I was like, what's going on? Something is not right with my body.
And you were still training hard? Like, you were still working out a lot? And
what was that?
You were still, like, training a lot? You were still working out hard? Like, you were eating a lot?
Yeah.
Like, you probably thought you were doing the right things, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. Is like, I didn't change too much. I was training hard. I was eating a lot, and I was probably, you know, eating too much and too much of the wrong foods now that I look back on it. But I think there's multiple things that kind of layered here, right? I spent years, like you said, just trying to gain weight through poor means of, you know, using protein powders and
McDonald's,
eating like 6 or 7 eggs every single morning, like the same breakfast every single day, and just stuffing myself. And like, I would get home after work at like 10:30 PM and I would eat like an entire pound of ground beef and like 4 cups of white rice. And I would just sit down at the dinner table and just like, I would not,
you wouldn't
get
leave
out of that chair until
you wouldn't
I
leave until
that
you were
plate.
Done.
And I would just, and that, yeah. And I did this for too long, where I was just like, not respecting my body, just forcing this upon my body.
Mm.
And my body started to eventually kind of shut down and
reject it,
right? And so I developed some intolerances. I developed food intolerance to gluten, dairy, and eggs specifically, right? Those were the three specifically that I started to uncover, right? So as I was feeling really shitty for like months and months, I was like, okay, I started digging into this. This is actually when I first read How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy by Paul Chuck, and started diving into his work.
Mm-hmm.
Because he touches so much on the holistic health aspect of this. I was like, okay, maybe I can find something here.
This, how old were you?
Right.
How long ago was this?
22.
Okay.
Yeah, 21, 22 when this is going down. And so he has like, in How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy, Paul Chuck has a very extensive like survey. Basically, you take the survey and you like,
mm-hmm.
you get a score in all these different areas, right? And so I found out, number one, my digestion was terrible, right? I was not digesting food, and because I was not digesting food, it attracted a parasite and fungal infection, right? They were feeding on the undigested food in my body, creating inflammation, bloating, brain fog, all sorts of shit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I slowly started to uncover by pulling foods out that, okay, gluten is fucking with me, dairy and eggs are fucking with me. So I had to cut those things completely out, right?
Is
that
hard?
Was tough. Like,
yeah.
Going from not having any food intolerance, just not worrying really about what I was eating at all, to like not eating those things at all, because like gluten, dairy, eggs, like that's in so many things, right? And
yeah.
Your like food product you pick up at the grocery store is probably gonna have one of those things in it. So it was like learning how to eat that way, starting to focus on recovery and gut health and keeping those foods that I was having reactions to out, and doing lots of fasts and different, you know, I was like, I went like raw vegan for a few weeks just to like cleanse my system, get any undigested protein out of my digestive tract. And, you know, through a few years of working towards this, see, this is not a sexy answer either, because literally
years,
3 years, and I just started eating eggs like 3 days a week, like a few months ago. And like, I'm doing well with it, but I still am avoiding dairy and gluten because I'm still reacting to those a little bit.
Mm.
Right. So over the course of a few years of really focusing on healing these things, I started to feel better. And so now I, you know, kind of through it being forced on me, I started to take note of like everything I was eating, how it was making me feel, right? It's like, okay, okay, I had a little bit of a reaction to that. I'm going to try and keep that out. Or, you know, what am I craving today? What is my body craving? Can I honor that and eat that and then see how I feel, right? And just focusing on the holistic health aspect of eating a wide variety of fruits and vegetables, eating really clean protein sources, getting enough sleep. And again, like I said earlier, what we think of as a normal lifestyle is so far away from what we need to do to be optimally healthy that I started having to really focus on getting 8 hours of sleep, right? Not watching TV before bed, not watching TV while I eat, focusing on chewing my food, doing breath work, doing meditation, bringing my system back down to homeostasis so that I could be in a state that wouldn't allow bacteria and funguses to grow, right? Because like in our natural energetic state, if a human body is healthy and has a strong energetic current, then, you know, harmful bacteria and parasites and fungus, they can't really thrive in our body, right? Yeah. But as you know, if you're not digesting food and your gut's starting to rot and you have excess food just like undigested in there and your energy starts to come down and the acidity of your body starts to go up, right? Then that becomes an environment where a lot of these things can kind of take hold and start to leach off of your nutrition and your body and start to pull energy from you. So I think it was tough, and I'm still, you know, working through some of it, but I think especially in the past year, I've been in a really good spot and feeling healthy, feeling strong, making progress in the gym, which is cool. And it's cool to know that I got through that and I learned a lot because of it. So now I can recognize a lot of those things in my clients and start to point them in the right direction.
Yeah. Dang, dude. That's awesome. That's really cool. Like how you ended that too, with now that you understand how this works in your body, you can do the same thing with your clients. That was also another thing I kind of touched on with Jake in my last podcast, is that the things that we can put ourselves through and that we not only tolerate, but also excel in, and things that we found success with, we can better demonstrate that to our clients, right? Especially if we've been a trainer for a few years or a coach for a few years, when you learn new skills, you figure out a way quickly how to articulate that and deliver it to your clients. And like for me, I gave the example of learning Olympic weightlifting, which by no means am I an expert yet, but I was able to do it for a few months, record myself, get feedback from Jake, get feedback from a few other coaches, and allow myself to see certain mistakes that I was making and fix them. That way, if I see them with my clients that I'm trying to do weightlifting with, or that are asking me to teach them through weightlifting, I know what to look for. I know what to experience. And to not selfishly bring this on me, I also was doing this with, I think I've talked to you about this, like those were my intentions behind doing the men's physique show, or those were my intentions behind competing in powerlifting, right? And it wasn't ever to be a world-class powerlifter or like a pro at men's physique, but I wanted to be able to put myself through a very, very structured diet, a very structured regimen of, okay, I'm a full-time student. I'm going to school for eight classes or whatever, five classes a semester, and then I'm doing recovery or cardio in the morning, going to school, and then I'm doing weights at night. I'm trying to follow a diet. I've been trying to do all these things, right? So I've been putting myself in a situation where I'm as busy as someone that's working full-time is. And I'm going to see, can I do this? And so I would take myself through that. I would coach myself through them and then experience a little bit of success the first show. I experienced a little more success in the second show by getting second overall. And now I'm like, okay, I've done this. I've done my research. I've done the grueling process. I know it can be attained. Now can I teach this to someone else? Obviously not to the extent of competing, but it's like, hey, man, if you're looking to lose, again, body comp, if you want to lose 5% body fat, let's see what we're working with here. Let's establish a baseline. And I'm very lucky that I had you help me coach through me with that second show. Like, okay, let's adjust your macros a little bit. Let's get these percentages a certain way. And let's start subtracting as the weeks progress and my training starts to intensify. And it's like, looking back on those experiences now, I can understand, oh, okay, this is why I was falling short on this and the first show compared to the second one. Or this is what I gained more experience from on the second show. And so now it's like, let's see how I can do this with my clients of, okay, we experienced a little bit of success and now we're having shortcomings. Let's go back to the drawing board and reassess. Okay, are you monitoring this? Are you monitoring that? No. Okay, let's keep everything else the same. Let's adjust this and then keep moving forwards. Right. And I'm lucky that, again, I had you help to help me with that on that second show of just like, okay, how is this going? Let's make sure your progress is still staying consistent. And I was able to lose weight in a more controlled manner. I was able to retain more muscle. And I think that was why I was able to do better in that second show. And then we went and competed. Absolutely. And then we competed in powerlifting together. And that was really cool too, because we both, for me at least, I can speak for myself that this is like, that was the first time I was really following a structured programming and you were paying for the program like through Dawson. Yeah. I was just like, oh shit, we're recording this. Like, yeah, I should record my weights. Like, can I do this with you? And that was really cool that we did that whole experimental phase of when we moved in together and we started that Tempe weights page and we learned how to record ourselves. And man, that was such a growing process in and of itself too. You know, like, obviously that page didn't take off. We didn't really gain a lot of followers from it, but it's like, it's something funny because that's a workout log that we'll always have. We'll always be able to reference to that and be like, what kind of shit was I doing back then, man? Like, and then like, right? Yeah, or so just funny. Like, it's when you have a better understanding of like where you want to be seeing your squat from a side angle or from a forwards angle to see if your hips are shifting or if you're collapsing coming out of the hole. It's like, these are things that you can objectively change if you're aware of like, okay, well, I didn't see it in that video. Let me change the angle. And for me, I don't know if you experienced that, but that was when like, when we were doing those Tempe weights videos, I was like, this is a dumbass angle. Like, why don't I fix this and see if I can, yeah. And see if I can get a better understanding of like, oh, if I see it from this angle, I'll know what more is breaking down or what more specifically is breaking down.
Yeah.
And that's, I've been encouraging some clients to do that too. Of just like, hey, record your sets. Cause if they're working out 3 days a week on their own and twice with me, I'll send them like workouts through True Coach or something and be like, hey, when you're doing this set, like record a side angle of it and let's look at it whenever we meet. And that I found a lot of success with, just as far as like, see how your chest is collapsing here, like see where we're losing tension or tightness in the bottom of the motion. And then we can work on it when we're together. That way, when they go back out to work out on their own, they're at least more conscious of it.
Thinking about it. Yeah. I think that just speaks to the fact that experience is king, especially in this industry and training people and health and fitness. It's like, you're not going to take a client anywhere you haven't been, right? You're not going to get a client to a 400 pound deadlift if you've never deadlifted 400 pounds.
Exactly.
You're not going to get a client to 10% body fat if you've never been 10% body fat. Mm-hmm. It's like, you have to go through these things to learn the process, right? I could talk about it all day, but that's why I love the Czech Institute and the Czech system, is because like, that's their number one rule. Like, that's the thing, is like, you have to walk the walk. If you do not practice what you preach, number one, no one's going to respect you. Number two, you're not going to be an effective coach.
No,
you have to, number one, apply these things to yourself. Yeah. And then through doing that over time, right, you learn so much. Like, we look back like on our powerlifting meet or your physique show, it's like, we could have done a million things differently. We could have done a million things better, but that's where we were at the time. We were doing our best for what we knew, right? Yep. For what we had available to us. So I think, hindsight's always 20/20, but it's just like continuing to focus on just taking in the experience and learning from it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's like, this kind of leads me to the last thing that I wanted to talk with you about is our influence that we have on the culture of the gym that we work in. I mean, with FunkFit specifically, like, it's a studio and you guys have what, 250, 300 members. And so you as coaches, or even the staff, like the front desk does this really well too. And like, you guys know everyone by name, you know them for like who they are, like what they're usually like what they're doing for work, or like some kind of personal thing that you can connect with them and relate with them on. And I think that that's so cool. And that's something that I was able to do moderately well here in Washington at Pro Club, at least at Willows specifically, more so than when I was at the Bellevue location. Is at Willows, there's this culture amongst the coaches. Even though I'm more so considered powerlifting or strength-based. There's a lot of CrossFitters. There's a people that specialize more so in running or whatever it may be. But as coaches, collectively, we work out together. We talk together. We collaborate together. And as the members, whether or not we're aware of it, they're watching this. And they're influenced by, like, man, these guys are, they're really pushing themselves. They're not just pushing us. Like, when they're working out, they're doing the same shit. And absolutely, that's what I love about and miss about at FunkFit is that, like, we were working out together as a team. Like, you, me, Luis, Jeremy, David, everyone, we were working out doing the strong and lean programs together. You and I were working out together often. And it's like, I feed off that. And I missed that so much when I first moved out here. Like, man, I don't have a lifting partner. And thank God I stuck around long enough and I met Jake and Jordan and some of my other homies that I work out with now. And it's, I don't want to lose that again. And that's what's like, I mean, I want to hear your perspective on this, but for me, like, I love being able to bring energy into a room, whether I'm coaching, whether it's the client that I'm coaching or whether it's the people that are around me that do my group fit classes or my team training classes or people that just see me working out, other trainers, clients, like, it's fun to be able to foster this energy and continue to nourish it and continue to let it grow and unify. And so what's that experience been like for you since you've been at FunkFit for so many years? You've seen coaches like myself come and go, and you've had a good amount of people stay there with you. And obviously your relationship with Jeremy and Luis, the owners, are very strong and intimate. Like, what's that like?
Yeah, I think first I would say that I missed that too when you left, because we trained together for so long that anytime we would train together, it would just flow.
Yeah.
Right.
Didn't have to
like talk about what weights we're doing or what, you know, what's going on outside of the gym. Like, we're just like, you do a set, I do a set, you do a set, and we're just flowing, we're just going and crushing it. So I did miss that, and I had to kind of find, same thing as you, I had to kind of find that groove and again kind of foster the culture, because there was, I mean, when you were there, our buddy Spencer was there, David was there, and he was healthy. I mean, he's still there, right? But he broke both of his legs a year ago, so that's been a huge recovery for him. Like, he's not, you know, it's crazy to see him go from deadlifting 545 to, like, you know, he's working on his ankles because he broke his legs. Like, so the priority has shifted, and he'll work out with us, but it's just not the same intensity, you know? Nothing against him. It just is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But when you left, you know, shortly after, like, Spencer left and Laura left, and so the whole culture kind of shifted around me. You know, I was still there, and
everyone's,
you know,
like,
multiple people,
what do we do?
Left at the same time, and I was like, shit, like, this feels so different. You know, how do I rebuild from here and try to keep the culture going? And obviously, Jeremy and Luis, the owners, are a huge influence on that, and fantastic mentors to me. But what I've tried to preach and be an example of is that we get after it, right? Like, we don't just train people, we train
exactly.
hard too. Like, we get ours in and we get after it, and so it's been cool, and especially in the past few months, been really encouraging the other coaches and even some of the cycle instructors to get in and do the strong and lean program with us, come work out with us at 1 p.m., you know, set that time every single day. 1 p.m., we're in here working out. Luis and Jeremy will show up. I'll show up. My wife, Bailey, will show up. Alyssa will show up. And even some of the other coaches will show up and just try to keep that consistency and that energy going, so that, you know, we know Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays at 1 p.m.
We're
in here getting after it, and we're going to do it together.
Yeah.
I think that and again, like you said, the clients seeing that, us just sharing it on Instagram, it helps feed that culture of, like, yeah, we get after it here. This isn't just we don't just mess around with, like, with bands and kettlebells. Like, we train powerlifting movements, we train strongman movements. Like, it's the real deal, you know.
Dude, it's rad. It's fun, and that's what I like with, I mean, even doing things like this, like podcasting and your walk and talk videos, and it's these small things that, again, they're nuggets. They're small things that we want to be able to drop to clients and anyone that wants to, again, absorb health-related information, health-related topics through coaches and practitioners that are transparent about it. Like, talk about, like, you had your shortcomings with diet, and I had, like, a lot of my shortcomings with diet and with a lot of different things. And we've learned to, like, embrace that, learn from it, and then move forwards and continue to influence not only, like, the members, but also influence our coworkers, yourself and me. And it's fun because it's an ever-growing process. We're never going to know everything, and we're never going to be at the top of the mountain. We're always climbing. And to me, that's what keeps me going. Honestly, like, I know that can be, like, discouraging to some people. Like, well, I want to get to the end. It's like, no, there's no end for me. It's like, this is, again, it's a lifestyle, right?
It never ends.
But that's the beautiful thing of it, is like, we can continue to learn how to become better health practitioners. And I get sometimes mocked for, like, you're not a health practitioner, you're a trainer. And it's like, well, I'm practicing healthy behaviors and habits. To me, that's a health practitioner. So my clients can be considered health practitioners if they're literate in these things and they're willing to put in the work of being conscious about their health on a daily basis. And that doesn't just mean weightlifting. And what's funny is that's kind of what got me into this industry, right? It was just like, well, I just want to get strong as shit and, like, look awesome and feel good. And, like, that was when I was in college, and I was like, man, it's going way beyond this. Like, I don't really care how much weight I'm lifting. I mean, obviously I'm going to try and get stronger every day, but, like, I like how I'm feeling. I like how I'm treating my body. I like how I'm treating the people around me. And
yeah, there's definitely a lot more to that. And, it's something that's been burned into my mind the past year is just this idea that whatever you do, you give permission to everyone around you to do.
Yeah.
So whether that's positive or negative, right? Whatever you do, you give permission to everyone around you to do. So
that's powerful.
You have more responsibility for your influence on the people around you than you think, right? I've done that myself. Just liked to think that, well, I'm just doing this, and, you know, I'm not affecting anybody else. This is just what I'm doing. But you have 100%. Those people around you, right? That are looking to you, and just, like, they see you doing something, and then they're like, oh, okay, that's cool. You know, whether it's I'm gonna get after it, or it's like, oh, I'm gonna, you know, I'm kind of been slacking on my workouts or my nutrition lately. It's just,
yeah,
you start to see it reflected in the world around you, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, I mean, Luis and Jeremy ingrained this into my mind really well too, of your posture is everything. It speaks so much about how much you care about being there. And for me, like, seeing how many coaches are just sitting next to their client while their client's doing squats, or, like, if they have their hands in their pockets and they're leaning up against a rack. And it's like, I know when I first started coaching, I was like, dude, you know, you don't understand. Like, I've been coaching for 8 hours today and my feet hurt. I'm tired. Like, I want to sit down, whatever it is, right? Like, selfish reasons, right? But it's the more serious that you take your profession, it's what you're saying. It's like, if I'm willing to just sit down during a workout, I'm allowing my clients to think that that's okay too. And that they can just kind of sit down and, like, check their phone or, like, check out this cool video and all these things.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, I still do it from time to time, but I'm much more conscious of it because of Luis and Jeremy kind of explained that to me. Of, like, listen, if you want to be viewed and seen as a professional, like, you have to act like it. I mean, I get that we're wearing gym clothes and we're wearing, like, relaxed outfits, but at the end of the day, like, you're still paying me a lot of money to keep you safe, to teach you more about your body and to get you stronger. And I want to be able to do that. And it's not going to be achieved by me sitting on the ground next to you while you're sweating and, like, straining yourself. Like,
absolutely, man. Yeah, that's one thing I try to remember as much as I can. It's like, okay, this person's paying me X amount of dollars per hour to be here, right?
Yeah.
To be here and give them the best of my attention and knowledge and energy. And it's not cheap, you know, like, I understand that.
Yeah.
It's not cheap. So try to remember that and just, you know, think about if I was paying this much money per hour, what would I want? What would I expect out of it? So.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we're still viewed as, like, a luxury now, like, that not everyone can afford trainers. I mean, I'm fortunate to be in an area where people have an excess amount of income and they can just spend hundreds of dollars an hour to see people like me. And they, like, show up 20 minutes late, or they show up and they don't really do much, or they just talk to their trainer the whole time instead. It's like, there's this energy in the room. And, like, Louisa would always say, like, you have to be the gorilla in the room at some point. Like, even though your client's paying for it and, like, they're the ones that, it's your money, you can do what you want. It's like, well, that's not the kind of trainer I am. Like, I understand this is your money, yeah. but I'm going to make sure like you're getting your money's worth, and talking to me that's for right. an hour is not getting your money's worth. And if you don't think that's the kind of trainer you want, then maybe I'll have to find someone else for you. But
yeah, I always tell my clients that you don't pay me to be your friend.
exactly. Like, that's just a bonus. If that's the case, like, that's awesome. Yeah. Cool. But that's so true. You don't pay me to be your friend. But yeah, man, I mean, training is a cool thing. It's fun and it's exciting. And I'm lucky that I get to have someone like you as a friend that I, even though I don't live with you or near you anymore, like, we still send each other like videos of like 315 for five, bro. What you got? Or we'll just like message Absolutely, each man. Other on Instagram. It's like, it's fun, man. This is the collective that we have and like what you guys are continuing to build over there in Arizona.
Absolutely, bro.
But I mean, I want to end it on that, man. Honestly, like, this, you're a huge influence to me, and I've always looked up to you, and I'm happy that we get to still stay friends and do stuff like this. And this won't be the last conversation we have on the podcast, but
yeah, definitely not, man. Yeah. And I mean, same to you. Like, I've always looked up to you and your work ethic as well. And, you've always pushed me to work harder. And that was something I had to overcome when you moved to Washington. But I think we're both in a good place. And I think I'm really glad that just that we've been able to keep the relationship as strong as it has been, you know?
Oh, no doubt.
Keep influencing each other from afar.
Yeah, man. One day we'll reconnect. We'll live back together.
Hell yeah.
But all right, brother. I'll talk to you soon. I love you, man.
Love you too, bro.